Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Jacob Kanzler and John Roering. Tomorrow is primary election day. How exciting. What are we going to bring to the office to celebrate?
John, are we going to have a pizza party?
Pizza party tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening. I don't know, donuts maybe in the morning?
A lot of coffee.
Well, you're not going to be here in the morning. So.
No, God, no. I'll still be sleeping, I think.
I'll be here in the morning. So maybe I'll bring donuts for everybody that's not going to be here all night.
That's usually what you do, Jacob. You usually bring the donuts in.
Is this my assignment now?
Yes. It's your reputation, if nothing else.
Quality custard filled Long Johns. That's the one.
I'll get on it. I'll contribute to the effort here.
All right. One of the things that we're going to be looking at with this election is, first of all, Proposal 1. Why would Proposal 1 fail, John, when you see all these different interest groups involved, the business community, the local government? It seems like it's got at least $8 million in ads behind it, and yet it could still fail.
It could still fail because it's a tax proposal. It's complicated. When people go into the ballot box, they're going to read it, and they're going to decide. And I think, Kyle, you got the language. How does this actually read? I don't think a lot of people have actually read this.
Approval or disapproval of an amendatory act to reduce the state use tax and replace with a local community stabilization share to modernize the tax system to help small businesses grow and create jobs.
Note that the personal property tax is not mentioned by name in there.
That's what it does.
Right. I mean, it's... You know, one is connected to the other, and I guess modernize the tax system is where they're going with that. But you know, a lot of big words in there. I heard amendatory. You know, I just don't know.
I haven't even read the whole proposal yet.
Oh, boy.
That's just the title.
Is that the first sentence?
That's just the title.
Oh, okay.
The amendatory act adopted by the legislature would, 1, reduce the state use tax and replace with a local community stabilization share of the tax for the purpose of modernizing the tax system to help small businesses grow and create jobs in Michigan. 2, require local community stabilization authority to provide revenue to local governments dedicated for local purposes, including police safety, fire protection, and ambulance emergency services. 3, increase portion of state use tax dedicated for aid to local school districts. 4, prohibit authority from increasing taxes. 6, prohibit total use tax from exceeding the existing constitutional 6% limitation, should this law be adopted. What are you talking about, John? This is all positive here. They can't increase taxes. It's going to create jobs. It says so right here.
I don't think it's all that clear, and I've been doing this for 18 years. And I'm just telling you, I think most of the people that are going to walk into the ballot box are going to say, I don't know about it. It's confusing, so I'm going to vote no.
The thing is, too, is that the legislature actually adopted this language themselves. They made this as part of the law to try and make it clear, to kind of dumb it down so that the Board of Canvassers wouldn't be charged with trying to encapsulate the Proposal 1 into 100 words. And I don't know if they necessarily succeeded, Jacob.
Yeah, I don't know what the Bureau of Elections would have done differently. I mean, you can see, obviously, the populist appeal, you know, trying to go straight to funding for schools and emergency services, things like that. The modernized tax system, I mean, I don't know what you take away from that. I don't know how you can necessarily deduce that's a positive thing without saying exactly what it is. I mean, yeah, like I said, it's really confusing.
And I don't know if you can actually make wording that would make it any clearer.
I don't know that you could either, and that's part of the problem. And it's you know, putting complex tax proposals in front of voters is a very difficult thing to do.
You know, obviously, our job is to try and figure this stuff out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could say that I completely 100% understand this ballot proposal. Do you?
No.
Yeah. I can't say that I absolutely got it nails 100%. Mm-hmm. I just can't. I've got a working knowledge of it.
Yeah.
And that's
understanding what they're trying to do, what they hope to do. But, yeah, it's confusing. And the language is confusing.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem here. All right, here's another theme that we're going into the primary election with. How far can the Republican Party go? You know, it used to be that the Great Lakes Education Project, known as GLEP, was kind of as far right as you went. Right to Life, if you had them, if you had GLEP, you had Right to Life, you're pretty much pretty far right. Now it seems like they're almost in the middle. You know, now they're getting into fights with Todd Corser, who you know, proposes to be, or, you know, farther right than them. They're getting into wars with Greg McMaster, who is to the ideological right, I believe, of Wayne Schmidt. What do you make, John? How far can the Republican Party go?
This is just one more sign of the mainstream Republican establishment fighting for control of this party. I mean, the DeVosses, if you look at the history over the last couple of years, have gotten more and more involved in what needs to happen to keep the Republican Party viable. They've just gotten involved in more issues that put them closer to the middle. And I think they're trying to make sure that the Republican Party stays as a viable choice.
You know what I thought was kind of an interesting story that we did last week in MERS is how there's this split between the Republican Party, and this is done by a Pew Research study that shows that there are really two types of Republicans. There's your business Republicans who are more concerned about the free market and don't really give a rip about necessarily social issues. And then you've got, like, the I think what they called in that Pew study is like the true conservatives who care about both, who are very much about social policy, and they're also very concerned about economic freedom, but have kind of a suspect with government. And I think what you're seeing here is these two clashing in more, maybe a more open forum than maybe we've seen in the past. And you can see that in these legislative races in particular, Jacob.
Oh, yeah, I would think so. And, yeah, to go back to your question, I mean, you know, how far right does, you know, the Republican Party go? I mean, it can be a little unclear. I mean, one thing that sticks out to me is, you know, Gary Glenn, you know, obviously raising a lot of money associated with the Tea Party. I mean, I guess, there's still an audience for that out there, so.
Yeah, and getting back to my point about the DeVosses, remember when they stepped in to stop Dave Ajima and to basically say this is wrong, that it's discriminatory, that we can't have this kind of stuff in our politics. That's what this battle is all about. It's making and ensuring that the Republican Party is still a viable option for conservatives.
It's making sure they can still beat Democrats in November is
maintaining,
what this is about.
Keeping the Republican Party a viable option.
Right, because if you only have 40% of the legislature, that's 11% less than you really need.
Right.
Here's the other question going into the election: union endorsements. Do union endorsements matter? Now, the reason I bring this up is the 14th congressional district, where Rudy Hobbs had been sucking wind and was in third place of all the polls until this past week, when he has the Mitchell poll show that he's now in the lead. Bobby McKenzie, we had a poll earlier in this election cycle that showed him in third place, even though he seemed to have been the consensus favorite among the union groups. Do union endorsements matter, John?
Yeah, I think they do, because, you know, when you've got voters deciding between a couple of candidates that are close, it may not be the issue you decide, but if you're like 50-50 between these two candidates, you need to go down and look at the list. Well, the UAW endorsed them. Well, if you're a pro-labor family, a pro-labor voter, that's a good thing.
And I think, too, though, you can't rely on that union endorsement and think that's all you need to do.
No, it's not all you need, but it's a nice backup layer. It's a nice thing to add to the list.
And I think this election is going to be very important, Jacob, for Democrats and for unions themselves here to show that their candidates and their support is still very important. I think Rudy Hobbs being successful in the 14th district, if that's what happens, Bobby McKenzie being successful in the 11th district, says a lot about still their influence in Southeast Michigan.
Oh, yeah, I mean, agree. I mean, they, obviously the right to work was a blow for them. I mean, they want to show that, they have a political clout and they want their candidates they support to actually make it to office.
The last thing I want to bring up, can money buy elections? I think that's another important theme here. I'm thinking of a couple people right now, John. One with the initials DT and the other PM.
I think you've got two congressional candidates there that show it makes a huge, huge difference. But I want to point out something too. If you think about it, I don't know what happens in the fourth. My heart says I think Mitchell probably got a faster start, and I think he's probably going to wind up winning it. But it was interesting to see. Someone we've had on this podcast, Stu Sandler, ran three of those campaigns, Trod, Mitchell, and he's running the Bishop campaign in the eighth. I think if you look at the fourth, if Mitchell does win, it's going to be because of guys like Stu Sandler and Jeff Timmer and the fact that he got out of the gate so early. So I think it's going to be real interesting to watch. But yes, money makes a huge difference.
Money can buy, but it will only go so far. Take a look here at Brian Ellis in the 3rd Congressional District. He's been running a campaign, it seems like, forever, hasn't it? Like, yeah. I mean, hasn't he been running this thing for at least a year?
It was last year when I went to his, I think it was last year I went to his announcement.
And he's not going to win, I don't think.
I don't think
And he
so.
Had more, it would seem like he had more money than Justin Amash.
I think he probably did. But, you know, Justin Amash is such a character. And I think after this election, he's going to be kind of, he's going to become sort of the eccentric congressman that's our congressman in the 3rd. I think he's going to be enormously hard to beat. And I think he's just got a persona that people, he's quirky, but we like him kind of thing.
So money can't necessarily buy
everything. It doesn't
election.
Buy everything, but it certainly is a big, big help. I mean, you look at the way Paul Mitchell canvassed the 4th District with ads so early. He got that 23-point lead so early. It makes a big difference.
Godfrey Dillard, John. He's running for Secretary of State and decided to abandon the Attorney General and is going to have a spot on the ticket, presumably on the Democratic side, to run against Ruth Johnson this fall.
It's August. I don't ever recall them having filled out the ticket this late.
Well,
or at least have a candidate.
Well, remember Sabaw, Macomb County Clerk, 2006?
Carmella?
Yes. I think she was late coming to the party, too.
Was it this late, though?
It was pretty late. It's not a good sign, though. It's getting off the blocks here, kind of late here. But, you know, this is kind of one of those top-of-the-ticket type positions, though, anyway, isn't it? I mean, if Shower does well, that kind of cascades down the rest of the ticket. It's one of those that's hard to stand alone and win on your own and beat an incumbent.
True.
Anyway, he did speak with the media on Friday. Let's go ahead and listen to that audio and hear how he did.
All right, Mr. Chair, it's your show. You can take it away whenever you're ready.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us this morning. You know, I'm thrilled to introduce Godfrey Dillard, a Detroit civil rights attorney and Wayne State adjunct law professor. You know, Godfrey's a good friend and a lifelong fighter and someone who's going to go in and fight for increased transparency in our political process, expanding the rights to vote, and creating more accessible Secretary of State offices. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Godfrey Dillard.
Well, good morning, gentlemen and ladies, if there happens to be a lady on the line. I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to speak with you this morning. Let me begin by saying, you know, as an attorney and I fought all my entire life to improve the quality of democracy, not only in the city of Detroit, the state of Michigan, around this nation, around this world. And I have, you know, fought for and spoken on behalf of equal opportunity and fair play, regardless of race, ethnicity, national origin, gender, or physical disability. And as I've traveled around the state in these last several months, I came to a recognition that there's nothing more important than the fundamental right to vote to make sure that democracy works in the right way. And it's just not the question of the right to vote, but the right for the vote to count. And I think that is just as important. The other thing that I came to recognize is the recognition of the corrosive effects of violations or abuses of the campaign financing laws in the state, and the idea that the voice of the wealthy or the privileged would suppress the voice of the average Michigander. And in addition to that, I was concerned as a visitor myself to branches of the Secretary of State's offices, the desire to make these places of convenient, pleasant, and welcoming for the everyday average citizen, not to stand in lines, not to be treated with disrespect. So I've come to the conclusion that the Secretary of State's office is the right office for me. And in this office, I intend to fight for the right to vote, that the vote be counted, that in regards to campaign financing, I'm going to audit it and make sure that it's transparent. I'm not going to allow abuses of the campaign financing law. I'm not going to allow campaign financing to dictate outcomes of elections, and I'm going to make sure that the local offices are places that are welcoming to the everyday citizen.
Great, Josh. Do we want to open it up for some questions?
Yeah, if folks have questions, go ahead by introducing yourself, identifying yourself with your name and the name of your outlet. We've got time for three or four questions this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Charlene. Media Consultants is my agency. And you have a superior law background. And how will this assist you in this job?
Well, as a lawyer, first of all, I will have a strong understanding of the election laws and how those election laws should be applied. I will have a strong understanding of interpretation of those laws, and I will seek to make those laws reflect what the intent of the legislature was at the time they were passed, and to make sure that they're enforced. So I think I have no better background than a legal background to enforce the election laws, the campaign financing laws, of the state of Michigan.
Thank you.
Godfrey, this is Chad Live in Good Detroit News. How are you going to not allow campaign financing to dictate the outcomes of elections? What would you do differently here?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is make sure that we have a real auditing of contributions and expenditures. And most important to do that is to be diligent and to enforce when you find violations. Filing of contributions, timely filing of expenditures and spending. And by making sure that I beef up the enforcement and the audit departments of the Secretary of State's office, I'm going to make sure that, as I said, that there's not an inappropriate or illegal influence of elections by the wealthy in the state of Michigan.
Paul Egan, Detroit Free Press. Mr. Dillard, unless I've missed it, I couldn't find where you'd formed a campaign finance committee. I mean,
right.
haven't you raised and spent any money during your campaign for attorney general?
Well, I have to tell you, no, I have not done that because I was deciding which office that I should run for, and therefore I did not want to make that move until I was sure about what I wanted to do. I did not want to be running for attorney general, collecting money from people on account of the attorney general position, and would come to the conclusion that maybe I should run for secretary of state and cause that kind of confusion. So I basically sat back and waited till I made my final decision, which I have now made, and I'm in the process of setting those things up right now. I have contributors who I've spoken to are ready to move as soon as I give the green light.
Godfrey Beverly Smith, Detroit Black Pages.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good lead-in. With the support that you have accumulated already, do you share to give us some of the names of those people that you already have supporting you for this run?
Well, let me put it like this. I think you'll see that when we make those reports of those contributions. I'm not going to give out names over the phone. You will see that because I have to report it, and you will have an opportunity to see those names in person who are supporting me.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Dillard, this is Kyle Malin from the MERS newsletter. I wanted to ask you about your run for Attorney General. How much this decision to run for Secretary of State has to do with a genuine interest in Secretary of State, and how much does it have to do with not maybe able to get the perceived support for Attorney General you would have liked?
Well, that's a good question. Let me say this. Both of these positions were available to me. When I looked at the Attorney General position, it was clear to me that, you know, that is a position that has a prosecutorial overtone to it, and a position that you represent the various different departments of the executive, and to a certain extent, as a lawyer, I would be obligated to follow somewhat the policy decisions that the executive laid out for its various departments, and to enforce those in the courts as appropriate. But in looking at my civil rights background, my I thought about that, and given the most recent attention to voter suppression, voter dilution, the changes in the Citizen United, the campaign financing, and the opportunity for me personally to be the executive for the Secretary of State, where I wouldn't necessarily have to be beholden to the governor as the lawyer for the state, would allow me to set the policies that would ensure that the right to vote and that the right to vote be counted and that there be transparency and accountability in campaign financing and that the local branches would be places of convenience and welcoming for the average everyday citizen. I could do that as a Secretary of State, as the executive, and not as a lawyer representing the executive. And I came to the conclusion that as a lawyer, even though I can do both of these positions, the Secretary of State gave me the ability to direct policy. I will be able to actually change and influence elections in the state of Michigan, and therefore I made the decision that I think Secretary of State was the best position for me right now.
Thank you, sir.
All right, with that, we're going to wrap up and let folks get on with their morning. If folks have other questions for Mr. Dillard or for the chairman, to me, I will set those up. We can do individual follow-ups like that. So just let me know individually if you've got more questions or need anything else from us. And with that, I will let folks get on with their mornings. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Jacob and John and Josh Pugh for having the candidate available to the media to ask questions. I still want to know who that first person was who asked that question. We also got to thank the Michigan Press Association for sponsoring this podcast, and also thanks to our listeners for tuning in and listening every week to our thoughts and perceptions of what's going on in the Michigan political world. And that's going to do it for this week's edition. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.